All right, guys, episode 3. Welcome back. Thanks for stopping by. I'm very excited about this episode. It's going to be a great one. But before we start, I want to let you know that this episode is brought to you by the Headshot Crew. We are the coaching platform for all things headshots. We're also expanding into portraiture. So if you like portrait photography in general, make sure you join the Headshot Crew. You know, we're developing a strong portrait track to complement our headshot track, so that's going to be a lot of fun. And we're implementing a lot of contests and a lot of cool prizes, so if you're not a member, go to headshotcrew.com and sign up for Peter Hurley's coaching platform. Also, if you're interested in a workshop with Peter, you can find all his workshop dates in the website. Just go to headshotcrew.com/workshops and you can find all the dates. He's going to be in Charleston in April 21st to the 22nd, and then New York on May 19th to the 21st. And then he's going to be in Houston in June 26th to the 27th, San Francisco, July 24th to the 26th. And then he's coming to Europe. Dublin, Ireland from September 1st to September 3rd. And then he's going back to Chicago, Illinois from September 29th to October 1st. And last but not least, St. Louis, Missouri from December 1st to December 3rd. So those are the workshop dates. If you're interested, go to headshotcrew.com/workshops and sign up for one of those unbelievable courses. These are all the headshot intensive. This is Peter Hurley's signature workshop. I've taken it many times, and each time I go, I find something new that I didn't really, get the previous time. So, it's always fun, and Peter keeps adding stuff to it and keeps changing it and keeps updating it. So It's great fun. It's aptly named, so it is intensive. It's a lot of information, but you leave there with a lot of tools to get your headshot work done. So again, go to headshotcrew.com/workshops to find out more and to sign up for one of those dates. I also have to give a quick shout out to Bart Van Haddam. I hope I pronounced your last name correctly. Please forgive me if I didn't. Anyway, he won the PhD competition for March 2018. And just in case you don't know what PhD stands for, it stands for Peter Hurley Degree. So you get your degree in direction by Peter Hurley. That's what PhD stands for. It's the name that we give to Headshot of the Month. So congratulations, Bart, and really good shot. And I hope you enjoy your prizes. Also, shout out to David Lee. He won Headshot of the Week for the week of April 2nd, and the shot is amazing. It's actually a selfie, so good for you. Great shot, and look forward to seeing more work from you in the future. Anyway, so today we have Ben Markham. He is a photographer based in Louisville, Kentucky. He is a headshot photographer. He's also a portrait photographer. He shoots amazing portraits, guys. He just started this new painterly portrait series that I love. It's amazing to look at. And we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun talking about stuff. I hope you enjoy this episode. All right, here's the podcast, guys.
All right, enough of that. Get over here. We're gonna start right now. 3, 2, 1, shebang!
All right, guys, here we go. I feel like I always start these the same way, but it really doesn't matter. I got Ben Markham with me here. What's going on, buddy?
What is going on?
Are you good? How's your life?
Man, I'm good. I'm a little frustrated. New studio isn't where I want it to be yet. There's still some drywall work to be done. But other than that, I'm fantastic.
Well, that's always pleasant. So yeah. You just moved to a new studio.
I did just move to a new studio. I moved out of my very first studio into my new one, and I moved into a bigger space. And, you know, I was able to get some separation, you know, so like when people are in the makeup room doing their thing there, I can go work on other stuff and not feel like I'm on top of the makeup artist or making my clients uncomfortable while they're, you know, getting ready. So it's cool. It's a really nice, awesome space in an old bourbon warehouse.
Oh, that's right up your alley then.
It was meant to be.
Okay. So did you just move just because you needed a bigger space? What was the main reason for you to move?
There were a couple things. The little area of town where I was, it was getting a little bit strange outside of my building, and I wasn't 100% comfortable with my clients walking through some of the activity. And then I'd outgrown it. You know, it's amazing how much crap you can acquire in 2 years. And I had acquired a bunch, and I was running out of room. And so I needed some more space.
Yeah, I'm finding that now, especially for my portrait stuff. I feel like I need a massive room just for props.
Yeah, and that's like something I got here. Like I had a corner of chairs and ladders. And like, what do you do with that? There's nowhere, you know, there's no good way to hide it.
Yeah.
So now I'm tripping over it and everything else. So now it's got its own little storage area, which I'm sure I will fill up pretty quickly.
I give you about 2 weeks.
You're being generous.
Yeah, I'm being generous there, but I'll give you about 2 weeks for you to fill that sucker up. Anyway,
it's going to happen.
Yeah, it will eventually. Anyway, congrats on the new studio. That's awesome. I love it. I'm actually thinking about moving myself because I am in a small space and I'm thinking about moving to a bigger one. But I'm now in the market. I just started going online trying to find new spaces yesterday. But nothing really that appeals me, but I'll find something. Anyway. I wanted to start this one. Well, we already started, but it really doesn't matter. You came from an audio background, right? You were an audio engineer, is that right? Or just an audio tech guy?
Yeah. So I was a sound designer and engineer for professional theater and, you know, a little bit of music here and there, but a majority of it was professional theater.
Okay. And I always like to know what was the transition point for people. Like, how did you just go? You didn't just wake up one day and go, you know what? I'm going to be a photographer. So, what happened?
Oh man! So I'm going to backstory it a little bit.
Sure,
so
we got time.
Oh, good. I started doing theater for pay at about age 15. Now, I wasn't a ton of pay at age 15, but I was getting the occasional check, so it counts. And so I was doing that through high school. In my senior year of high school, I was doing theater and doing an internship at a theater, but then I also took a photography class there. And in my photography class in high school, it was really a darkroom class. You know, they didn't really teach, you know, we learned like the exposure triangle and stuff, but then it was mainly how do you go to a darkroom. That was just kind of fun, something I did, but then I really just pushed my theater career and I pushed it hard. You know, my goals at that point, you know, my brief stint in college, one of my professors was like, you know, what's your goals? And I was like, you know, I want to be a resident sound designer at a major regional theater and all of that. So fast forward through a lot of grinding and all that jazz. I ended up as my official title was associate sound designer, and then department head at Actors Theater of Louisville, which basically meant I designed as many shows in the season as our resident sound designer did. So I did exactly what I wanted to do. And then as things were going on, the industry changed pretty dramatically from what it was when I started to what it changed. And I wasn't enjoying myself anymore. And I'd been moved to a management type position where it's like all I was having to show for my stuff at the end of the day was, you know, a clean email box and, you know, a bunch of meetings, which, you know, I tell stories, you know, I don't care about my email box. So that was going on, and there was a lot of just bad vibes running around. And my wife looked at me one day and was like, "You got to stop. This is going to kill you." And it was, physically and emotionally just beating me up. And so I was like, made one of the hardest decisions of my life and decided to leave the theater. And I was actually doing web design when I left. And I just wasn't happy doing web design either. You know, I was mainly doing stuff for mom and pops, and the money wasn't there, and it was just, I didn't enjoy it. And at some point during that, like, somebody needed images for their website, and stock photography, you know, for the clients that I had could be rather expensive. So I was like, well, screw it. You know, I'll go pick up a DSLR. You know, I remember the basics, and it's a tax write-off, so I can go shoot what I need to do for this person's website. And then when I'm not doing that, I can take pictures of the dog. That'd be fun. And then I started kind of getting the theater itch, because the theater's kind of like the mafia. It's like you never really get away from it. And I was like, well, I could pick up and do headshots. And it just kind of all started going from there. And I'm sure we'll touch on my first headshots later in this. But yeah, that was my transition. It's, you know, theater and unhappiness to picking up a camera.
Oh, there you go. So you pick up a camera because you were just, it came out of frustration then. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You just felt the need for creativity, and the medium was photography.
Yeah. You know, it's, I have to have stuff to show. And it's like, I could have gone and built birdhouses or something, but that's not at this point in my life. Maybe in 30 or 40 years, I'll sit out in the garage with the dog and whittle away. But no, it was just, it just kind of felt right. I remembered I enjoyed shooting film, and I was like, I can make stuff again. That's cool. So yeah, I just needed a little bit of creativity.
There you go. Do you still do anything related to audio nowadays?
I fight it. I've been asked, I got offered a couple shows this past summer, which I turned down. One of my signature pieces down here at Actors Theater of Louisville, Actors Theater does a production of Dracula every year, and they use my design still. So I've not had to go back and remount it in the past couple of years, because it's just, it's a remount, so it's been okay. There's a new director coming in this year, and it's a guy that I love dearly, and I'm considering coming out of, and I'm finger quoting, retirement, to go and usher it back to stage with him, just because he'll have a different vision for some things. And I'm considering, I haven't made up my mind. I was talking with a production manager friend of mine yesterday at another theater, and he was talking about some shows that their theater's doing this year, and it piqued my interest. So I don't know. So I'm fighting it, but yeah, man, theater's the mafia. You don't get away.
No, I completely, no, I get it. I get it. Well, I come from an acting background, so I completely understand. Every time I go see a show, I'm like, I miss being up there.
Yeah. And I miss my crew, you know, and like that camaraderie that was there. And it's like, you know, theater crews and people who work together were really dysfunctional families a lot of the time.
Oh, yes.
But it's like even through all like the little silly squabbles and all that crap, everybody at the end of the day has everybody else's back. And we're really just all there to make something cool. And when it lands, it's a good feeling, you know, and I miss some of that. Especially now, you know, I work alone in the studio, you know, unless there's sessions in here and like the makeup artist is here or whatever. So, you know, my sound department at Actors Theater, when I was running it, you know, we were, you know, six deep. So I had a little group there to bounce things off of. And, you know, I don't have that in person right now.
Isn't it interesting that I was just, you know, we were riffing about this and I just thought, isn't it interesting that people in the same industry, even though they're in different countries, they still experience the same environments?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, I think that you could take any group of theater artists from anywhere and drop them into a space with a script, and it's, you know, all of the same, you know, it's everything, nothing else matters. It's the relationships and the work, you know. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Well, segueing a little bit with the audio stuff. Nowadays there's a lot of emphasis on video. And a lot of people are saying that photographers are doomed because of video, which I don't necessarily agree with.
Don't agree with it at all.
Okay, good. This is wonderful. We're in agreement here. But I've heard the argument, and that I agree with, that you can have bad video, but you can't have bad audio. Why do you think that is?
I think it's because on some primal level, music is vibration, sound is vibration, and it, you know, it tweaks with how your heart beats, and it tweaks with, they did a study with the Jaws music. So the Jaws theme, the da-dum, ba-dum, right? It's a heartbeat. And if you actually like were to follow your pulse with it, that music speeds up. As that music speeds up, if you're taking your pulse and you're watching it, your pulse rate will go up as well. And that was an intentional choice by the sound designer to stress you out while that shark's coming. So I think it's a lot of that. It's like it touches your soul. It touches your primal bits.
Yeah.
Hashtag primal bits.
Jesus. And so it begins.
And so it begins.
What are some audio tips that you might have for photographers who are, you know, shooting some quick and dirty BTS for their own stuff, or they want to shoot a promo video for the businesses? What are some quick audio tips that people sometimes forget about?
If you can afford an external microphone for your stuff, get one. You can start small. You know, you don't have to go crazy and buy a $2,000 microphone right out of the gate. But get something that, you know, like the microphone on your DSLR or the microphone on your cell phone, for the most part, is going to be fairly rubbish. If you're doing voiceover stuff and you just need to do something quick and dirty, though, and your face isn't going to be seen, like I will occasionally voice over videos, you can use like your iPhone earbuds to do your voice recording on that. Actually, if you watch the studio, I did a video. Oh no, wait, I changed that up. I was about to tell you a dirty lie. So scratch that.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I know, but I caught myself. I remembered I changed it up at the last minute. So see, I'm not a completely filthy liar.
Good then.
Yeah. So, and if you're going to be doing stuff outside and you're going to use like a shotgun mic, get a windsock. It makes a difference. And then, okay, here's one that everybody always forgets. If you're recording, record 30 seconds of silence before you do anything else. When you have to remove noise later, you will thank yourself.
Oh. Yeah. People forget to do that.
Yeah. Just give yourself like 10, 20, 30 seconds of silence, and then go, and you will be much happier in editing.
That is true. Well, sometimes I struggle with this podcast, actually, I struggle with finding like dead silence of not just no sound whatsoever to edit the noise out. So that's actually a good tip for me too.
Huh. Yeah. So at the end of this, we'll just sit here and shut up for a few seconds, and there you go.
Well, I usually do like 5 seconds. I didn't know we had to be like 30.
No, it doesn't have to be 30. I mean, I got a little bit carried away. I mean, you need a good sampling of things. So I go 10. 10 is good. 10, do 10. 10.
All right, we can do 10. 10 is 10 is more acceptable than 30. I don't want to sit there for 30 seconds just looking at the wall.
What else have you got to do?
There's plenty I got to do. I have a busy life here. Anyway, so that's my baby in the background. So I apologize to all the listeners.
I just got upstaged by baby. Sorry about that.
Anyway, so you are in Louisville, Kentucky, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so that's a fairly small town.
We're a mid-sized city. We're not the size of Chicago or New York or anything like that. But as cities go, we're on the smaller side.
Okay. Did you find, so as you were starting your photography business, what were the main bumps on the road that you found on starting a business on a smaller size town?
You mean besides not having any idea what I was doing at the time?
Yes.
the biggest thing out of the gate was educating people, and that's still.
That's a never ending process, right?
Yeah, I mean it's like especially like with headshots, and it's like people don't. Well, actors know, but non actors. You never realize they need them until they do, right? So it's like, you know, the amount of phone calls that I get that are, you know, oh, my boss told me I had to have a headshot by tomorrow, or, you know, this magazine's doing an article on me and they need a headshot. So it's been educating people that they need it and that they do have a digital, if they're finding me, they have some sort of digital identity. You know, they're on social media somewhere, they've got websites, they have whatever. So it's been trying to educate them that they can have better than a cell phone photo, they can have better than a cropped wedding photo or whatever. So I mean, that was the biggest challenge. And then then building a name and a brand, you know, I'm coming from absolutely nothing in a photography business at age 35 to trying to make it go. It was 36, 30, I don't know. I was mid 30s. You know, that was a challenge.
Yeah. So there's this new trend. It's not a trend really, but it's a new movement. So headshots are clearly taking off, but parallel to that, we started developing this personal branding thing that you didn't hear personal branding like 5 to 10 years ago, and all of a sudden it's all the rage. What is it to you? Like, how do you identify personal branding?
You know, it could. I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. And, you know, they were asking, you know, how do you define it? What does it look like? And I think it can be whatever you want it to be and whatever your client is comfortable with on to represent themselves. So it's, you know, I think it's just a matter of images that show the personality of the person and the mood and vibe they want to put out to the world. You know, a great example, my first shoot in my last studio, the woman that we were working with was a nutritionist sort of thing, and she wanted some kind of comical vibes, and she wanted vegetables flying at her. So we ended up doing a bunch of shots where the makeup artist that I was working with was pelting this woman with carrots and celery. So is it a little bit different? Yes.
I'm extremely confused right now.
No, she was pelting that poor woman with crudité. But that was how she wanted to represent her brand, you know, like for her contact page, she wanted a photo of herself answering a banana.
What did she do?
She's like a nutritionist, like health person, dietitian thing.
Oh.
But she was trying to add some levity to it as well. So,
okay. I kind of see it. I kind of understand it.
Yeah. And oddly, like once it hit her website, because I was skeptical, I was like, really? Like, you want us to like, and I'll chuck vegetables at you and you're paying me. I'll throw whatever you want at you. That's cool. And I was skeptical. And then the way it flowed with her website and all of her social media, it worked. It was exactly spot on with what she wanted to present to her clients. So it's, you know, you've got to figure out what your clients are looking to do, what they're looking to put out to the world, right? So, but that was a really long-winded answer, and I got to talk about throwing vegetables at people.
No, the whole point of this podcast is to get you guys to talk, Ben. That's the whole point of it.
Right. Yeah, that.
Yeah, I'm glad. Yes, that's the whole point. So long-winded answers are what's expected here.
Oh, I'm good at long-winded.
I know. That's why I brought you on. Anyway, so you're starting in a small town, and what's a good way to start to distinguish yourself from all the other people? Like, what if you had a photographer come to your studio and go, listen, I am in nowhere, in the middle of nowhere, and I want to start a photography business. What can you give me, like, two tips on how I can distinguish myself from the rest of like from everybody?
Be you. I mean, you've got to find like your voice and how you communicate to not only the public, but then also how you communicate with the people in front of your camera. If you go in there and you're trying to be like, let's use Peter as an example. If I was trying to be Peter Hurley in here, it's not going to read. And if I was trying to be like Peter Hurley in my social media and on my website, it's not going to read. That's not my voice, you know? So it's, I have to be the truest form of me, because that creates comfort, and it's an odd, like, people feel like they can trust me. You know, it's, people can smell dishonesty a million miles away. Like, it's a subconsciousy sort of thing. They get it. And then the other, you know, tip two would be, you know, put out work that looks like your work. You know, don't, you know, you can be inspired by, and you can riff and you can do those things, but put out great work that is yours. And it reads, you know, people can tell when you're trying too hard or when the work isn't genuine, if that makes sense. And it's, I don't know how to even describe that, but it's, yeah, people, it just, they can tell.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that very interesting. I find that very interesting. Like, being yourself, like, we have to tell people to be their themselves.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I'm inspired by other photographers, you know, I'm inspired, and obviously, you know, being a mentor in the crew, I'm inspired by Peter, you know, I was drawn to that somehow, but my, you know, if you put a Ben Markham next to a Peter Hurley, you can tell the difference. Or, you know, if you were to put, you know, any of us against each other, you can tell whose is who, because we're bringing our voice to it. You know, I'm inspired by Leibovitz. I'm inspired by Avedon and Penn, and, you know, the list can go on. And so I can, you know, all of that plays into what I do. But at the end of the day, I'm never going to be Richard Avedon. He had that under control, you know, so I got to focus on making my stuff.
Yeah. To develop that a little bit, I would also, I think it's good advice to I would find somebody, and I do this all the time. I would find somebody whose opinion I know is of value, and make sure that I would show my stuff to them first. And if they think it's good, I would then throw it out to the public. Because the worst thing you can do is market bad work.
I agree. You couldn't hear it, but I was over here nodding along the entire time. But it's true. It's, you know, I certainly did it and still do. You know, there are photographers that I am fortunate enough to have friendships with that I trust, and I trust their eye. And you know, if I'm uncertain about something or I feel like I can push further and don't know what that is, I reach out and ask for critique. I don't trust Facebook for critique, you know, it's because, you know, and I don't trust Instagram for critique because everybody has an opinion, you know, behind a keyboard. So it's, you know, find the people that you know and you trust and you admire, surround yourself with them, and it's going to push you. It's going to make you work, which is awesome.
Yeah. Plus, quick tip, guys. Don't go on other photographers' social media platforms and critique their work. That's just not cool.
It's not cool.
I've seen people do that, and I just go, what are you doing? Like, people are seeing this. People are seeing you critique this other person's work. That's not cool.
I have had other photographers go on to my social media and comment on the physical appearance of a person in a photo.
Oh.
And it's like, whoa, why would you do that? Like, did you do better? Read what you type like 5 times before you click submit and yeah, make sure you're still cool with it.
That's a one-way trip to ban land.
There's a reason I have a 30-second undo on my Gmail.
Oh. I would love to have that on Apple Mail. That's why I'm so careful with my typing.
Yeah, if I have to send a serious email, often my lovely wife reads it first.
Oh, that's useful. Yeah, I should probably do that. Never thought of doing that.
Yeah,
sorry,
it helps.
Just never thought of it. Anyway, so speaking of social media. I see that you're a pretty big blogger.
I have been doing some blogging.
Okay. Why is, like, I see people start blogs and then I see people not start blogs and I just go, do I need to start a blog?
So there, last year I was like really, like starting in about March last year, I got really dedicated about trying to put out a blog a week. I've slacked off a little bit this year. I'm starting to pick it back up. Okay. The reason I was doing it and I felt that it was important was, you know, Google loves fresh content. You know, they love new stuff out there. And I'm a big proponent in using content in multiple ways. So like I've written blogs and it's, you know, I mean, some basic stuff out there is like what to wear for your headshots and that sort of, you know, and there's some really basic stuff that I'd be willing to bet a million people have done. But then like when I'm speaking with clients or whatever, I can send a link to that blog along and it adds a little bit of credibility, right? So if I, like I did one about me and the, what's it called? It's like, you know, we're a team, I believe is what it's called, because I believe in my sessions that it's not just me back there smashing a button and it's not just the person in front of my camera doing their thing. We're playing off of each other. And maybe that's my old theater training and watching like really good actors work, and like a performance could change night to night. People react and it changes. And so I did a blog on that. And so now clients get to read that. And so they realize that they're not out there alone. That's a lot of why I was doing it. And it was good content. And then it was good to be able to show it, to share it on social. It's a great way to get involved with people. Like I've done actor profiles, you know, so which is great when you can get somebody else to write your blog for you. You know, you send them 5 questions and they answer it, and that's the easiest content on the planet. And then they're more likely to share it as well. So that's more eyeballs on your website. And there's a host of reasons to do it, you know, and it's, I'm not trying to be a professional blogger in the, because there's people out there who make, you know, gobs of money off of blogging and getting, you know, selling ad space and that sort of thing, which is awesome. And that's not what I'm trying to do. You know, I'm just trying to generate content that's useful to people give some value and that I can kind of make it evergreen, that I can continue to share with new people as they, you know, come into my atmosphere to build confidence in them that I know what I'm doing. So I get to see them in the studio.
Gotcha. And then I've heard people say that, like the thing with the funnel where all your social media should lead to your website anyway, is that, like, let's say I don't do that very much, I'll be honest. So let's say I'm sharing a picture on Instagram. How can I integrate that into that funnel mode where it leads into my website?
I do agree that everything needs to lead back to your website, because if I'm seeing your stuff on Facebook, if I'm seeing your stuff on Instagram, I'm not in buy mode right now. I'm in scroll mode, and there's a pretty significant difference. In Instagram, before you have your 10,000 followers, I think that's what it still is right now, to be able to do the swipe up in your stories.
Yeah.
You can still get links in your bio, which I know everybody knows that particular trick. But it is still useful, and it's, are you going to get, you know, 5,000 clicks on that link in your bio? No, but I still do get clicks. It still does get eyeballs to my site. I track that stuff through all the various analytics. It's, you know, and then with Facebook and Twitter as well, I'm pushing on driving back to my website, because my website's where the sale's going to happen. It's where they're going to find, you know, they're more likely to fill out a contact form there, or use my online scheduler or whatever, or even just click around for a little while. And now all of my content is getting pushed in their brain. So the next time they see it on social media, they're like, oh yeah, that guy. And then when they finally do go, oh yeah, I really do need a headshot, or I really do want to go for a portrait session, I'm top of their brain.
Oh, that makes sense. So let me, you mentioned you were a web designer for a while.
Not a very good one.
There you go. Okay. Well, you were still a more than qualified web designer. Let me pick your web designing brain real quick. So, having a multi-page website, with different galleries and different pages, like a contact page and a pricing page, versus having a one page website that you just scroll, which one's better and why?
One is not better than the other. You need both. So the why, I forget the exact number, but let's just say a really good chunk of people, are doing a majority of their web consumption on their phones now. And folks who are consuming information on their phone aren't necessarily gonna like do your little drop down menu and click over to a page, and they're not scrolling. Like, they want to scroll, find what they need, do what they got to do, and then get back to whatever else they want to go do. So I think it's important to have all your contact information on the front page. I've got a contact form on my front page. I've got my online scheduler, like, right tip top, you know, so it's there. They don't have to scroll at all if they don't want to. They can just book. So that's for my phone users. And they're still welcome to go click around and do other stuff, but I know a majority of the times I don't click around on websites that much when I'm on my iPhone. I want to see what I need to see quickly and then get back to whatever I'm doing. But then there's still a lot of people who are using desktop. Like, I probably am a 50-50 user. You know, I'm 50% on my desktop and 50% on my phone. And I am more likely to click around on a website when I'm sitting at, you know, at my desk. And so having that information in other places is useful. Not only that, but that gives you an opportunity to have more content out on the site, which Google can crawl, and it's going to help you rank in different ways, which makes you easier to find. I mean, more content is always good. You just have to arrange it in a way that makes sense and isn't going to confuse your users.
So what you're saying is people should have a homepage that's scrollable, but then
scroll and swipe.
but have more. What do you mean swipe?
Well, I mean, think about, you know, I so many things now, like you swipe through. I think about, like, if somebody posts multiple images to a post on Instagram, you swipe through those, right?
Yeah.
So you can have swipeable stuff on that page. Just make sure that folks know that it's swipeable.
Okay. And then have other pages on your website that have more content. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay. And you're, in that case, you're catering to both audiences.
Correct. And you, you know, and people on the web, people don't read stuff on the internet. Google reads your stuff, but most of the time people don't. So make the pertinent information easy to find. So it's, people skim, they skim your pages. They're not reading. If you've got a novel out there, nobody reads it. They just don't. I have a lot of information on my website, and people fill out the contact form from various pages and ask questions that I know were answered on the site. So nobody's reading it.
Especially about me pages, guys. If you have a 40 paragraph about me page, you should probably change that.
But I would encourage you, go do a video on your about me page. There's a video on my about me page, shameless plug. I have actually booked clients because of that video.
How so?
Because people have watched it and then been like, oh, I felt like I knew you. And like, so I was like, well, then I'm doing it. It pushed me over the edge.
Okay. I got to write that somewhere because that's actually a good idea. I might do that. I already have a video on my website. Well, I have a one-page website where you just go in and everything. Well, not everything. You get like session info on a separate page and stuff like that. But most of it is on my landing page or homepage.
See, now landing pages, you get into a whole other beast. And like you could open such a can of worms and then doing like Facebook ads and having specific landing pages for specific things. And man, we could do like a week's worth of podcast just going through that stuff.
Oh, good Lord. Okay. Well, I mean, we can brush on it. Do you want to brush on it? Should we brush?
So I will caveat that and being like, I scratch the surface with what I know about it, you know, and I am studying and researching more of that stuff all the time. But if you want people to do a specific thing, like sign up for a mailing list or to book now or to whatever, you can set up specific landing pages to send them there. Like I wouldn't, if I was doing a Facebook ad at this point, I would not send somebody to my home page because there's so much stuff there that they get there and go, well, what do I do? What am I supposed to do now? So if you just build a landing page that is simple and to the point, you know, sign up for my mailing list, and which nobody's going to sign up for your mailing list unless you give them stuff. So have something to give them if you're trying to get them to sign up for your mailing list. You know, it's send them to do a specific thing and not just here's my website. Thanks for coming. You know, that will get you nothing.
Speaking of mailing lists, what's the whole thing with the mailing lists nowadays? What's the point of having a mailing list?
So the point of a mailing list is people spend a lot of their time on social media, and think about how you use your social. Like when you're on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter or whatever, you're not reading every post. You scroll until something grabs your eye and then you stop for a second and see if it's worth it. And then you keep scrolling. So it's become static. It's noise. So with a mailing list, you have a direct line of contact to people. You get to cut through the noise and put your stuff directly in front of them. Now, not everybody, a majority of people actually are not going to open emails that you send out. It's just not happening. But some are. And those people will, like, so a great example, I just put the online scheduler on my site recently. So I did an email to my mailing list. It's like, hey, I just made this even easier for you. Go click the big shiny red button on my website and I'll see you here. and it booked me clients. You know, so I, because I'd done the same thing on my social, which did nothing. People were like, okay, you're selling crap, whatever. My mailing list got through. So it now, you know, my mailing list is tiny right now because like I haven't done anything to, like I've not done any offers or, you know, here's your free ebook to sign up for my list or anything like that. And, you know, and I think about all of the junk email that I my email box right now is a dumpster fire from all of the crap that I get from various things. So, you know, you get stuff, so you don't read everything. So if you're going to use a mailing list, you've got to put content out in that are going to get people to open those emails, which is, you know, I haven't mastered it yet. And there's, I could spend the next year just researching how to get through all that. But
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, it's that's the point of it. It's cut through the clutter.
How often are you sending emails out?
When I was blogging once a week, I was sending one a week because I would announce it to my email list because I was like, well, some of these people are going to go click this, like, and they did. I haven't been as religious about it recently, unless I've got something going on, like putting the scheduler on my site. So because I'm trying to find a different tactic to get them to do things, to get them to go tell their friends about me or to book a session or whatever.
And then the golden question is, how do you get people to sign up for your mailing list?
I do have a MailChimp sign up form in the footer of my website, and then it's in the sidebar on my blog. So I've gotten some that way. In the contact form on my website, I do have the question, because people have to agree to join your mailing list. If you just go sign people up for your mailing list and just start sending them stuff, you are breaking so many rules. And if you get reported, the fines are ridiculous. So don't do that.
Don't do that.
No. And it's like they're big. And it's not just like you did this, you get fined once. It's you get fined per person that reports you. So it's ugly.
Definitely don't do that then.
No. And so people, you know, I have a question. Do you want to join my mailing list? And I'm actually shocked by the amount of people that say yes. And so I go manually add them to the list. If I do any speaking engagements, I will have a thing like join my mailing list, and people do sign up for it. So yeah, and it's like there's multiple ways to do it, and it's, you know, I did a promotion a little while ago when trying to build my portrait portfolio and trying to get that going. And, you know, I had a thing in there, join my mailing list. And out of like the 200 emails that responded to that promotion, probably 75% joined my mailing list. So.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So
I really, it comes down to ask them.
Ask
and
people.
Then give them something. I think about all the mailing lists that you've joined. You know, it's like, well, here's this free ebook if you just sign up for my list. And you're like, well, I want the ebook and I can always unsubscribe. And you might eventually unsubscribe, but you don't for a while. You get those things and either open them or delete them for a while.
Yeah, I generally subscribe to them, and then I only unsubscribe when those emails start getting annoying.
Right.
I'll generally try to read them, but if it's just not good content, I will just mark it as read. And if it just gets annoying, like if you're emailing me every day, then I'm unsubscribing. Sorry.
Yeah, like you've got to give people value on things. Like I think Lindsay Adler does it really well. Like I get the occasional email from her list, and it's enough to make me go, oh, hey, there's Lindsay. But I'm not sitting around, like, she's not hitting me every day. So I'm like, oh dear God, why am I getting another email from Lindsay, you know, from Lindsay's list? So she's a good one to follow, you know. And then of course in the crew, you know, we get our weekly one, and it comes out on Tuesday before the crew cast, which is perfect. You know, so we know it's coming, yeah. You know, but it's also going to a very targeted audience. Like it's not hitting, you know, it's not hitting everybody who's ever done, you know, been on the internet.
There you go. That's another, there's another perk of being a crew member. You get a, you get an exclusive mailing list.
And you get tips in there that are fantastic.
Yes, the crew tips. Crew tips. You get crew tips, guys. That's what I'm trying to say. Anyway, so radical segue here. Radical segue. So I've been seeing a lot of these unbelievable painterly portraits you've been doing.
Why, thank you. Yes.
So how do you find... do you copy paintings? How do you find inspiration for those?
So, like, I've always, for as long as I remember, I've always really dug and thought that the big, you know, portrait painting things were beautiful. Like when I was a kid, my mom worked at Kentucky Opera. Kentucky does have an opera, and they were, at that point, their offices were in an old Victorian mansion in downtown Louisville called the Brennan House, which was also a museum. And like the Brennan family in their dining room had these big, glorious oil portraits of the entire family, like all around the dining room. And I remember those growing up. And then, so then growing up, blah, 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 you know, I, you know, grew up, whatever. So I've just, I've always dug it. And then I started, like, my wife, actually, there's a website called Everything But the House, which is an auction website for like estate sales and stuff. And like 2 years ago, my wife found this big, glorious oil painting on there that we got for like a song. It was like $250 or something. And like the frame is worth thousands. It's a big gaudy frame and I love it. And so like this thing sits in my house and I've been staring at it and being like, man, that's really cool. So we've started like, again, like going to museums and stuff. And I keep finding myself in front of paintings, like Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, just like standing there staring at things. And it's kind of started sinking into my brain. It's like, I should start riffing on some of these and just have some fun, you know, why not? And then I didn't do anything with it. And I was like, eh, whatever, you know? So my wife runs a business, called Custom Wig Company, and they needed some product shots of these historical wigs built in a historical way. And I was like, well, I have a good excuse now just to go riff on some painting stuff. So we did these portraits for them in these 18th century wigs. And I had a blast. It was so much fun. And I finished the images and I'm just like staring at them. And then John David Pittman's voice popped into my head from something he said to me at Headshot Mania, where he was like, man, you just got to make stuff that you want to look at. And I find myself staring at these 18th century images and going, I just like looking at these. So a couple weeks before, we'd been at the Cincinnati Museum of Art, and there were several paintings that grabbed my eye. And like I took photos of them and had them on my iPhone. And I decided to riff on one from an artist named Joseph DeCamp. It was a woman drying her hair. It's a woman wrapped in a sheet and drying her hair and doing these things. And I was like, you know, I don't have to have a large production to do this. I need a human being and a white sheet and something to lean on. And this could be just a simple thing, you know, I don't need like a makeup artist and clothes and props and all that stuff. So I riffed on that one. Like I tried to recreate his, and then I did a little bit of a different pose, and like, I just kind of fell in love with it. And it's like, they're getting ready to go to the printer now to hang here in the new studio. So that's where I've kind of been like, so, and actually now my wife and I, we're digging through paintings, and like, I've always loved like John Singer Sargent's stuff. And like, I'm looking at a lot of like Winterhalter stuff right now. And, just how many names just walked out of my head, but like, we're looking at them and just getting inspired and digging into them. And, you know, it's a good excuse just to have some fun. And as JDP would say, just make stuff I want to look at. So
yeah,
there's your long-winded answer.
Yeah, that was great. I just love it when, us as creative people, we just find stuff that really gives us, that really scratch that itch that we have as creatives. Because sometimes you might have that, like, you might walk around with that itch for months, and all of a sudden you just try something and it, like, it scratches that itch that's been bugging you for months. And there's nothing like it. So if you're a creative person and you're feeling like you're in a rut, or you're feeling like, just try different stuff.
Yeah. I love so many different styles of portrait and whatever. And I will experiment with other things, you know, throughout my career, which I fully anticipate to be a long one. But right now, I'm just having fun doing this. Like, we're buying clothes right now and, you know, like props and all this cool stuff. And there's a couple different styles of painting that we're about to experiment with. And it's just like, we're both excited, you know, with her being a creative person as well. Like, but she's been so focused on her business for the past couple years, and I've been so focused on my business, neither of us feel like we've really had that creative outlet. And so for us to get to create things together is really exciting. It's going to be fun. So yeah, there you go.
How do you draw inspiration? Like, how do you approach these projects? Like, do you find a painting and then try to recreate it, or do you draw inspiration from it and then do your own thing?
Little column A, little column B. I mean, it's, like, and you can thumb through a lot of Winterhalter stuff, for example, and there's a lot of stuff that's just like big, flowy, fluffy stuff in various styles. So, like, we're not going to necessarily try to go, okay, we're doing this Winterhalter or anything, but we kind of look at it and go, okay, so this is the vibe. This is where he, you know, this was his jam. And so then it's playing with that. And seeing what we can do, you know, even with the decamp that I just riffed on, you know, I lit it completely differently than how he painted the light in that original photo. You know, he, from looking at it, you know, his light was very straight on. And my light isn't, because I wanted a little bit more contour in my model's back. And so I wanted to play a little bit more depth than he did. So I riff on what I like. You know, it's end of the day, if you don't like it, then who cares? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I completely understand. And that's actually a good, I remember this the other day because I went through this. So as a, I'll say as a young kid, because I'm still like, I'm 25, so I can't just say, well, when I was a kid, and I can't say this to a man like yourself. But anyway, when I was younger, let's just leave it like that. When I was younger, I remember when I first started dating my girlfriend, and like, her father's a sculptor and her mother's a illustrator. So she grew up around art all her life. Meanwhile, I had no connection to art until I got into acting school and then I got into theater. But I remember her taking me to museums, and I would just be like, oh, museums? What am I doing here? The other day, we passed by a museum. She goes, oh, let's just go inside, check it out. All of a sudden, I find myself just looking at these paintings of just people. And oh my God, look at the lighting on that one. Oh, I got to find I got to try that lighting pattern. And I got to try that pose. And I got to try that background. So just go to museums. Just find stuff and draw inspiration from it. I know I've done that.
Yeah, like, I got to get my nose like right up on a Van Dyke, and holy cow, it melted my face. And so any of you close to Cincinnati, there's a Van Dyke hanging up there. Go put your nose as close as you can to that thing and just take it in. Seeing it on your screen will not do it justice. It will punch you in the soul. It's amazing.
Jeez, punch you in the soul. That's strong.
That would be my new t-shirt.
Sheesh. well, I was actually talking about this with Mike Schacht last week regarding, so our headshot work tends to be, for the lack of a better term, tends to be a little stale creativity, simply because you're shooting the same scenario. The only thing that changes is the person. Do you find that doing this type of work, this type of portraiture, gives you a chance to release yourself creatively, like just break the chains and just go crazy all of a sudden?
You know, I'm actually going to disagree with you a little bit on the headshot side of things. It doesn't necessarily get stale for me because everybody is different, and how I have to interact with each person is completely different.
No, absolutely.
And like when I get excited, when I'm shooting, and like when the shots start rolling and like I know we're in gold, I get loud, and I occasionally, you can tell how well one of my sessions is going based off of how loud I'm yelling obscenities sometimes, just because like I get into working with that person. So that like that never gets stale for me. That said, to go to the other part of your question, I mean, doing something different is fun. It does feel exciting and cool, and you know, I'm shaking it up is good, right? It's like, you know, just pulling the rug out from under yourself every once in a while. It feels a little bit dangerous. It feels exciting. So yeah. And I think it's good for those of us who are artists. And I know there are some headshot photographers out there who go, well, I'm not really an artist. I'm a business. It's like, no, you are. I mean, if you're doing it correctly, you're telling stories with this person. You're getting this stuff out of them. And that to me is art. But to shake your art up every once in a while, it'll change how you do everything else, which is exciting and it's fun.
Now, I want to go on the record here. I find my headshot work absolutely fascinating. The only thing I'm saying is I think that technically, I mean, in technical terms, it tends to be very repetitive, where your lights are pretty much the same, and the way you're shooting is pretty much the same. All of a sudden, if you pull back and go into a portrait mode, you just go, okay, well, how am I going to light this? That's what excites me about it. That's what's different for me. That's why I get so amped up whenever I have a portrait session.
Yeah, no, I dig. I'm with you. I'm on it. No, I wasn't trying to be like, no, that's a factory. That's not at all what I was saying.
I just don't want the powers to be that go, oh, Peter doesn't like shooting headshots now. He's outgrown headshots. That's not true. I love headshots.
Oh, and Pedro's too good for headshots now. I see.
No, I'm not too good for headshots. I think nowadays, even to this day, headshots are too good for me. Like, I'm not qualified. No, that's not true. Well, I
Shut
hope that's
up.
Not true. Anyway, I'm just fishing here. I'm just fishing for some compliments.
I am sure that when this airs, your Facebook feed will fill with people telling you how great you are.
Oh, wonderful. That's exactly what I'm trying to get out of this, guys. Finally, you finally know what the whole deal of this podcast is.
So just put yourself over.
Yeah, yeah. I just want cheap plugs and cheap pops and every like all kinds of love. I just want love.
You're loved, Pedro.
Yeah, that feels good. Anyway, I want to thank you, Ben, for spending an hour with me just talking about stuff. We're good friends. It's always good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Where can people go to find out more about you?
You can go to my website at benmarcum.com, and that is M-A-R-C-U-M. I am on Instagram. My handle there is at benmarcumphoto, and all of you who have been on Crewcast know what I just did. I think on Facebook, I'm Ben Markham Photography, I think. That sounds like me. So basically my name on any social media, you will find me. And then, yeah, I'm doing business coaching this weekend at Startup Week in Louisville and helping new entrepreneurs get some business ideas off the ground. So that cheap plug for them.
Oh, there you go. All right. Thank you for this, sir. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I will talk to you soon.
You as well. Thank you so much, man. I had a blast.
Have a good one, buddy.
Cheers.
Bye. That's it, guys. That's episode number 3. I hope you had a lot of fun with it. I want to thank Ben for coming on and talking to us. And I love Ben. He's a dear friend, and it's always fun talking to him. And I hope we had a lot of good information that you guys can use for your own businesses. All right. Once again, Headshot Crew, guys, if you're not a member, join it. It's fun. And I will see you guys next week. Have a good week and have fun with your life. All right. Bye.